welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I'm your host, Jason Bishop. And with me today, as always, is Trish Coughlin.
Hey, everybody.
And Sam Stepanenko.
Hello, everybody.
Welcome back, Sam.
Thank you.
You know, I'm having a bit of post... No, is it postpartum depression? Is it... The chair of woe is gone.
The
chair of woe is gone.
Separation anxiety.
Separation anxiety. Yeah, separation.
Well, no,
anxiety.
It's you're in mourning.
It's
not postpartum depression. It's like you're in mourning.
The chair of woe.
You're grieving, and that's okay.
Yeah, the chair of woe is gone, and I made an adult purchase.
And it is a damn sexy chair.
It really is.
I mean,
we're trying to come up with a new name for it.
Sexy chair.
Well, I'm thinking the damn sexy chair of awesome.
It could work for me.
Mm-hmm.
It could work for me.
All right.
It's a touchy-feely chair, though. It massages like nobody's business.
Yeah, it's a massage chair.
Who needs a girlfriend when you have a chair like that?
An adult person who understands that human contact is something people need?
Nah.
As I bought a massage chair.
I'm not saying you don't like but a massage chair is not a replacement.
Nah, fair enough.
No, and honestly, to get the full
it's
effect
a wonderful
of massage
addition.
Chair in that respect, you gotta be on it face down.
Yeah.
That's not so comfortable.
And that went somewhere I wasn't intending it to go.
And sometimes you're like, I don't know.
But how we roll.
Yeah, yeah. You see, I start shit and then you guys finish it.
Oh, yeah. And like, as a woman, that vibration has to come up a fucking lot if I'm going to get anything out of that chair.
Oh, yeah. She found out it was vibration and she just jumped right in.
I did.
It ain't no washing machine.
And I put it on high and I'm like, no, this is fine. But
yeah, I've had that comment a few times. Eh, this is fine.
But to be fair, I rode my bike here and that it was nice.
Okay, good. Massage the buttocks.
Yes, and the hamstrings, which are fucking killing me right now.
So yeah, we are doing fantasy films for the entire month of June. Five fantasy films. Well, five fantasy-themed podcasts, I should say. And this one is number 3. This week we are doing The Sword and the Sorcerer from 1982. Directed and screenplay by Albert Pyon. Does that sound familiar to you guys? It should. That goes back to our cyborg episode.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. I wasn't here for that, so...
No, Sam might not remember, but Trish does.
That was the movie I was so cranky in. I did not like it. And this one doesn't make me happy about him either. This guy is... You know how you don't like Matthew Broderick? I think this guy is going to be my Matthew Broderick.
Well, there's some Matthew Broderick I like.
I'm sure there might be some Albert Pyon I like, but I'm not getting anywhere.
They're very rare.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. This guy might have something I like. But it's going to be hard.
Yeah. He did co-write this screenplay with Tom Karnowski and John Stuckmeyer. But as screenwriters, this is pretty much their only thing. They're more producers than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
They did go on to better things as producers.
Yeah.
Albert has not.
No.
Recently, around 2012, he did... a movie called Tales of an Ancient Empire from 2010, starring Kevin Sorbo, and it's kind of a spiritual sequel to this movie.
It is the sequel to this. If you watch the end credits, that's the name that they say
Watch for the next adventures of Talon.
Yeah,
but Talon's not in that movie. I couldn't see anybody named Talon in there.
Oh, we're not saying it's not a lie. We're saying it's a sequel that they weren't thinking about.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no. What I was reading about it, it's a spiritual sequel to it. And there are definitely characters in there with the same names, like Alana and Zusha, although they spelt it differently in that one. And unless Talon's first name is Aiden, which I guess would be Kevin Sorbo.
Could be. No, Lee Horsley is supposedly in that movie.
Yeah, I looked
really?
It up, too.
So what? Is Aiden 60?
He's not one of the top billed cast, I'll tell you that.
No, but yeah, I was reading, I did read that he actually did, is in the cast.
Because the person cast as Alana, it looked like she was not even 30.
Of course.
I don't know what the hell's going on, and I have no intention of watching that movie after watching this one.
30 years on, like, I don't know. That's a long time between trying to do something.
I don't know what I was thinking. As a kid, I really liked this movie.
Well, this is why I'm not a very nostalgic person.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to say without fail, but oh so often, you're going, wow, I really love that movie when I was a kid. I'm going to watch it again. And you watch it, and you're just so horribly disappointed. It's like, wow, what did I see in this movie the first time?
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's some, like, you do it and you're so gun-shy and you're like, oh. But then there's some you watch and like, okay, this holds up, thank God. Thank God this holds up. This is not one of them. This can't be.
Yeah, well.
I can see where you'd feel the design. Like, it's got something there, but.
Oh, it definitely has something there. And I think part of it is the fact that it was early on in the fantasy film
Now,
time of the 80s, right?
For its day, this was the most successful independent production at the time.
Yeah, really? I looked at budget and return, and it was...
I don't remember what the budget... I couldn't budget find the budget.
It's on Wikipedia. It was $4 million.
Okay, I didn't see the budget, but it did gross, just in the U.S., $39.1 million.
That is wildly successful.
Yeah, and I don't know past the U.S. gross, but, I mean, and that's already a big success.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's all, especially early 80s. I mean, that's really good return on investment.
Which makes it a little baffling that they didn't do a sequel back then.
I know, right? Like, that's what I... Yeah, if it's that successful, I could see why they would do that.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, they used the money from this to finance other stuff that didn't go as well.
Well, yeah, he joined the canon... crew of people, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why. Maybe he was just more keen on Cyborg, and we'll see some more parallels as we go. Structurally, they're very similar movies.
Somewhat, yeah.
Yeah.
There's some wild differences, though.
Yeah.
Like, he's never really on a quest. He's never really going anywhere.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true.
He stays in the same spot. The person he's supposed to be protecting, he loses a lot.
Yeah. Well, other than the crucifixion scene, I guess there's really...
Yeah, the crucifixion's about it.
I don't know. Albert Pion likes to crucify his heroes.
He does, but he does it correctly in Cyborg and incorrectly in this movie.
Maybe he learned something in the intervening 20 years.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
Or I guess 8 years, but...
So, yeah, this stars Lee Horsley, Kathleen Beller, Simon McCorkindale, George Maharis, Richard Lynch, Richard Mull...
I know!
Anthony DeLongis, who's come up again from Masters of the Universe, so go back and listen to that one. And Robert Tessier. And a bazillion other fucking people, because they like to just keep introducing characters the whole way through this movie. Like,
I
an
know.
Hour 15 in, they're still introducing characters.
And we don't know, I don't know
why. The movie's
why.
An hour 40.
Yeah, it was getting really confusing, to be completely honest.
They throw so much information at you within the first 10-20 minutes.
And totally miss off information you probably should know.
Yeah, it's baffling. They give you all this information about, like, the kingdom and what Cromwell, which is...
Richard Lynch.
Who... And you were asking me about Richard Lynch. Oh, I recognized him. That's because he was in literally everything in the 80s and 90s. Like, I don't think that guy turned down a job, but the jobs just kept getting worse and worse.
Yeah, well, and you know what? If you want to be a working actor, sometimes that's what you need to do. Yeah. And I mean, he's got a very unique look. Like,
he was always perpetually...
He looks like a bad guy.
Yeah, well, apparently, because I was really interested in seeing it, because I did recognize him from other things. So I did a little research on his IMDb and Wikipedia, and he does have facial scarring from burns.
Ooh.
He set
that
himself
happened later in life.
No, it happened in his 20s.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, he was in a park and he set himself on fire while he was under the influence of drugs.
Oh wow!
Yeah, he burned 70% of his body.
Wow! Yeah.
So I have an immense respect for somebody who can come back from something like that was self inflicted, intentionally or unintentionally, but to turn it into a reasonably successful acting career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he was always busy right up to his death. Rob Zombie was using him, I think his last role was Lords of Salem.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and he passed away in 2012.
Wow.
Yeah, but he was in lots of stuff. I remember him in a movie called Bad Dreams, which I probably should have known was going to be not so good right off the bat, because part of their tagline was like, "Move over, Michael." Jason, who? Freddy, fuck that guy.
Oh, yeah, you can't... No.
Yeah, as soon as you start referencing other...
If other movies
icons,
are your taglines...
Yeah, you're screwed.
You're screwed.
So
it's like, there's two things. There's also another thing, too. If you reference, like, if another director's like, this is a great movie, and they don't say anything else...
Yeah, it's a fairly unmemorable horror movie, but the one thing I do remember of it was my introduction to Guns N' Roses, and Sweet Child of Mine was in the end credits, and I'm like, fuck, I love that song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That started my love affair with Guns N' Roses.
GNR.
Yeah, and it was like this musical revelation in high school. So
yeah, for me it was the Deadpool with Clint Eastwood because they were in that.
Yes,
right.
And it was their music that they used for Jim Carrey's Rockstar.
Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah, yep,
that's I remember that. That's my first GNR song.
Yeah, and that that was the one that sort of introduced me to them. But we're getting off topic.
Yeah, we are. Okay, so, this movie.
We do that.
Yes, we do. So the one complaint I don't have about this movie is the acting. It's actually pretty competent for the most part.
Sure.
Oh, for the most part, yes.
Yeah,
for
most part. Given what they had to work with, I think they did a pretty good job.
Yeah. I mean, their scenes are it's fairly quick, snappy kind of cuts. So when you're seeing a scene with dialogue, it really is just a couple of sentences before they move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
So you don't get enough time to really get a lot of bad acting.
Full scenes are kind of rare.
Except for that opening scene where they're resurrecting Zeusia.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the longest
And that had the only
scene.
Bad acting in it. The witch was horrible.
The witch that was raising Zeusia.
Yeah, she was pretty terrible.
Actually, I thought the final scenes with Zeusia weren't that great because it wasn't Maul. Richard Maul had such a terrible reaction to the makeup at the beginning of the film that he just dubbed over another actor in the lot because the makeup looks different and just the way the character
he doesn't look as imposing. You're right. Yeah.
So yeah, it's a different actor in that last bit. But
that explains a lot because at the end I was like, "Huh, is this supposed to be the same dude?"
Yeah, and I mean, fortunately, it was very brief and snappy, right? So you didn't see a lot of it, so it wasn't that jarring, but it was noticeable.
Oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I think if they had Richard Maul in it, it would have been a different ending. Like there would have been more. It would have felt more of a climax. Right.
Yeah.
Well, the whole end of the movie was pretty anticlimactic.
I mean, the movie's called The Sword and the Sorcerer, and the whole movie, I'm going, where the fuck is the sorcerer?
I know, right?
They introduce him just to kind of maybe kill him off, and then you don't see him again until the end, and I'm like, it's Sword and the Sorcerer. Where's the sorcerer?
I know. I need a sorcerer. And again, like, the thing with the whole weird sword that he has.
It's like Cyborg without the cyborg.
Yeah.
Like, what is with Pion and not putting the title character in the movie?
Yeah, he should make one called Hero, and it's just all bad guys.
Yeah, because that's what he does. Like, see the irony? He's the world's first hipster who doesn't get it.
A movie called Dogs, it's just cats.
You know what I did there? I went the complete other direction.
Yeah. Fuck you, Pion.
Titles. Titles are meaningless, guys. Like, is he trying to do this philosophy? It's like, titles mean nothing.
Oh, no, they mean everything. They draw the audience in so that you watch his shitty movies.
Oh.
And it's like, I want to get to see a sword and a sorcerer. No, you're not.
Nope.
Psych. You just paid your $13 to watch me masturbate on screen.
I know, right? I have a feeling he had an idea. Like, is there like a cut? Is there a bunch of scenes on a cutting room floor that clarifies a lot of shit here? Because I need more information.
I don't know. I saw two lengths of this when I was looking this up on IMDb. One's 1 hour 39, and the other one's 1 hour 40. So I'm not sure what's in that minute or less, but it can't be significant.
It can't
not
be enough to fill in the gaps, that's for sure.
No, no. Well, you know what? I'm going to run the trailer and let the audience catch up, and we will dive right into this.
Listen now of a time long past when sorcery thrived and wild adventure was forever in the offing. A deadly sorcerer is called out of nightmare by a ruthless king driven into evil. And the mystical sword is forged for a mighty warrior who rises out of legend to topple a kingdom. The Sword and the Sorcerer. Resurrection from the dead. You want me to snatch your brother from the king's dungeons for one night with you? That's a slim bounty for such a task.
Why, you bastard.
One man will control the entire civilized world. Cromwell's power. Cromwell's bride. And Cromwell's flesh! Gentlemen! A titanic struggle between good and evil that determines the fate of an entire dynasty. Dungeons and dragons, serpents and splendor, wizards and witches, danger and desire. And the mightiest of all heroes, in the greatest of all adventures, the sword and the sorcerer.
Okay, that was a really long trailer, so you guys, at least you only had to sit through 3 minutes.
Yes.
Unlike the hour and 40 that we sat through.
Yeah, we saw through, yeah.
Did you hear the despair in my voice?
Yeah. I felt there. Nothing. It's like it's the hour and 40.
So we got Roguish Heroes.
We've been crucified along with Talon.
Yes.
Yeah, we got Roguish Heroes and Sorcerers with E.T. fingers and...
And witches who don't do anything, even though they're supposed to have power. I don't get it.
Like, I don't know.
Why did you need the witch to do it? Because apparently she means
every
nothing.
Every woman in here looked like they were cast from a strip joint.
Yeah, really, yeah. And every single... That's because every single costume came from a strip joint.
Yeah, that's fairly true, yeah. Actually, the witch had the most clothes on, most of the, I think, in the whole movie.
True, true. Well, although at one point Talon is just walking around like Tarzan.
That's
pants.
True. He's
he's naked for a lot of the end.
Well, and yeah. That's the thing. They kept calling him the barbarian. It's like, you're not really.
Yeah. Okay. Cromwell's trying to conquer a kingdom, and that's the opening bit. We see him resurrecting Zuxia from wherever, and the witch is resurrecting Zuxia, and we get him wanting proof of his power. I didn't resurrect you. Did you just stand around and do nothing? So he does some thing with his little nacho fingers and rips out the witch's heart, who's pretty disappointed by that.
What was happening there? Like, wasn't there the one knight saying, like, we'll improve it? And then he kills the witch. I'm like going, isn't he? How about he kills the guy who asks him to prove it? Like, wouldn't that make more sense? He's like, I'll show you.
That would have made more sense. First step in the rewrite. The guy who asked the dumb question gets dead.
Yeah.
Right? He's the one that he proves his powers on. I think I like that.
Yeah, because he's being insolent to him. So why would he be pissed off at somebody else?
Exactly. Yeah, why would you kill the person who resurrected you?
Yeah, he was really pledging his fealty almost immediately to Cromwell.
Mm-hmm.
When Cromwell was being a dick right off out of the gate.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, fuck that guy. The witch is the one that brought me back.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about the tomb catacomb thing that Zuxia was in.
Oh, the maces?
That was extremely well done given the time.
I love that.
Yeah, that was so cool.
I want to keep that. I love like soul faces being like, ah. Yeah,
and I think it should be done as a practical effect just like they did in the original movie.
For sure.
They covered some things up with low lighting and stuff like that, but it could be done and done better, but for its time, it was really cool.
Yeah, actually have, now that you mentioned the lighting, I have a real problem with the lighting. I feel like it's all lit by flames and shit.
I think they were trying to go with that natural lighting, like the way it would be.
Either that or just to really hide the shitty makeup.
Oh, that was the other thing, too. And they did that with a lot of fantasy films in the 80s, crappy lighting to hide the flaws.
Yeah. It looks, the whole film comes off kind of grainy and slightly out of focus to me in that regard, because... Because, and that's just the dim lighting. It's not out of focus. It just has a very soft look to it.
Well, the entire movie, I have issues with the production of it. The costumes were mostly horrible.
Yes.
Yeah.
The hair.
They were bad.
Was painful. I mean, even in the 80s, I would have gone, really? Really? Prince Valiant haircuts? No.
Yeah. But it's weird. Like, the guy's hair, you're right. The guy's hair was very problematic. The woman's hair, strangely enough, not too bad.
No, you're absolutely right.
Like, I can get that, but yeah, it's like they decided they had a hairdresser one day and probably was like, okay, this is how you do it, and then they left.
I've been on those sets.
Yeah, and then these guys try to recreate it every day and it just gets worse and worse. I feel that's what happened.
It was really actually distracting for a lot of it. I'm sorry, let's get back. I'm kind of skipping around again, as usual, but the lead character, the guy who played Talon, who's Lee Horsley, I think his name is.
Yeah.
Horribly miscast. I'm sorry, but because Talon was in his late teens at best. 11 years later, he would have been in his mid-20s. Sorry, Lee Horsley looks like he's in his mid-40s.
That's the first thing I thought.
Well, I got the feeling he'd been off on lots of grand adventures and whatnot with his weird tri-sword thingy.
Yeah.
But only 11 years. They specifically say 11 years in there.
You know, he was a kid and he's already had that funky sword.
Yeah.
Yes.
See, I would have expanded it. I would have made it more than 11 years, and I would have made it so, like, he was maybe early 30s, because you can have that rich of a life from your late teens to your early 30s, because they said he was, like, a buccaneer and, like, a rogue and, like, doing all this other stuff. Like, he could have been a pirate at some point. If it's early 30s, like, just, you're still a little younger and tough, but yeah, you're right. When I first saw him, I'm like, that can't be him. He's too old.
Yeah. I mean, unless the years are, like, really freaking long on this in this universe that they're in.
Yeah.
Like, maybe they're twice as long as our year. I don't know. But it was jarring. And I, at no point in the movie did I buy him as the hero.
And Cromwell doesn't look any older.
Yeah.
King Richard was the ruler of the kingdom. The good king that Cromwell overthrew. And Talon was his son.
Mm-hmm.
His youngest
son. Where did the other two kids come from? Because Alana and Micah.
Yeah.
Micah, who they say is the new heir to the throne.
But not Talon's brother.
They cousins or what?
Because, like, there's a, at one point, Cromwell takes away Talon's sister. I think his younger brother gets killed and his mother gets killed. So, like, the youngest sister is somewhere. We don't know where.
So that's not Alana.
I don't know. That's not Alana.
Good.
No.
Given the way that ends.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, when you see the sister being taken away at the beginning, she's like a bright blonde child. I thought it was going to be that other blonde woman at some point.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
It may have been, because in the casting, at least on Wikipedia, they showed the younger, I think her name was Elizabeth, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Don't quote me on that. But they talk about her as a younger child, so maybe it is her.
Yeah.
Maybe that was his sister.
Yeah, because she's a little blonde kid. That's what they
okay.
are.
Okay, and that's
see, and they never
already brings up a fundamental problem. They have all these people floating around, characters that should be important and don't really become important. They have like one important scene where they unlock somebody or something like that. Like that blonde, that's what she did. She unlocked somebody. And
Micah, who's they say is the legitimate heir to the throne,
and then
how?
There's that one chase scene where Talon crashes through the window into the harem, kisses the one slave, and then later on she's the one that frees everybody.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, for God's sakes, that's all it takes, huh?
Well, to be fair, I was approaching it from the idea, I'm like, sure, he's like a barbarian guy, but they're like going, maybe this guy can get us out of this whole harem crap, because we don't want to be Cromwell's bitches.
Yeah.
No, yeah, it could be.
Oh, fair enough. I mean,
he spells freedom for them.
There are so many characters in this film. Like, that's one thing we need to iron out away.
Because it did get overwhelming. Keeping track of people, it filled up the movie unnecessarily.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? So a lot of really great things could have been happening, but instead we get these little scenes with characters who don't even need to be there.
Oh, and in certain points, too, where you need more characters with him, he's alone. Like, the part with the rebels in the cave, he does this by himself? That's a reasonable point to have other characters there.
We're introduced to this whole band of rogues that he's put together. They're kind of swords for hire.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what they do, overthrow evil kings and shit. And you don't see them most of the time.
Until the very end.
Yeah.
And then they add other people beyond this band.
Captain Morgan.
I know.
Captain Morgan, who's really ripped, by the way.
I know. I was like, Captain Morgan's kind of interesting. Let's watch a lot more Captain Morgan.
I would have just made him part of the movie earlier because I so enjoyed him when he showed up. But it's like an hour and 15 into the movie when he finally gets introduced.
And they don't explain.
And he's got dialogue and everything. Like, he's very significantly on screen.
Yeah, and they don't explain, like, why his group is there.
No.
Who they are.
No. They're just all sitting at a bar, and they kind of overhear.
Well, a whorehouse.
Sorry, it was a whorehouse. And, yeah, they need
the same
more
thing
men.
Back then.
They were going to go rescue Talon, and then we don't even see anything happen. Next thing we see, they're all in jail. This failed invasion of the castle.
Yeah, like, it's a change in tone. They're like, oh, yay, we're going to get there. And there's like a da-da-da-da little thing, and then they're in jail. And I'm like, no.
And I'm sure that was an attempted humor, but it was so bad.
Oh, it's not funny. It's not interesting. It's the
just
dumbest
confusing.
Thing.
It's just confusing and jarring,
Like most of the movie.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of cool ideas here, and he just kept adding characters. I don't know, maybe people were just visiting the set, or somebody walked by it. Hey, do you want to be in my movie?
Yeah, or he cast people and then had a fight with them because they're like, dude, this is stupid, so he fires them and brings in other people.
I have no idea what happened on that set, but everybody who showed up into it, like the key grip, they got a role. Mm-hmm. I'm sure if I went down, like, the equipment guy was probably in there somewhere.
Oh, probably. I mean, the lighting guys didn't have anything to do, so maybe they were all in it.
Probably.
No kidding. Did you get that candle lit? Good. All right.
Okay, put your costume on. Yeah, so it's that heap of rags in the corner.
True. They're like, you're a lighting guy. Carry this torch.
Yeah. It's literally a candle and a bounce board.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, do we have anything good to say about this movie?
There's lots of fun little bits. Like, you know, Talon's very roguish. Yeah. Sometimes he kind of reminds me of, like, Han Solo or Indiana Jones. He's kind of got that kind of fun quality to him. He's so overconfident in this movie.
I think the good things I have to say about this movie are not so much what has happened, but some of the concepts that are there. Like, some guy raising a sorcerer to attack a good king because he just can't get it, and then, like, years later, the king's son comes back for revenge. That's a pretty solid idea. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the king's son becomes, like, this rogue and this, like, sword for hire, I like that, too.
I have to agree. I mean, the general concept of the movie was not bad. And the return of the sorcerer, the betrayal and return of the sorcerer, I buy that, too. I'd like that.
Yeah.
But the revenge plot seems to be ancillary. Like, he's hired to do this with Cromwell and negotiates, turns down money until he gets sex, whatever.
And that's just skeevy.
That just makes you
that
creepy,
makes
dude.
Him an asshole. Yeah, like, he's just creepy. The whole time I don't think of him as a hero. He's just a protagonist.
Yeah.
He's not a hero.
No, he doesn't come off as a particularly heroic guy. Like, he doesn't want to do this for any noble reason.
No.
Like, well, I think nothing about what he does is noble, but when you really think about it, I mean...
But he has full
he's
motivation.
He's a sword for hire. There's nothing noble about sword for hire.
But he has full motivation to go after Cromwell. This should have been a goal since as a child, that driving need
back. Her selling her body to have rescue her brother really doesn't even need to be in whatever we come up with. It doesn't need to be in there. His motivation should be, wow, I finally got a chance at this guy who ruined my life.
Yeah.
Who took my family away from me.
Like, I wonder if it wasn't what they were trying to do with this was the fact that because he'd gone through this transformation as becoming a guy for hire, that he'd lost some of that moral compass if he'd been brought up by the good king, like, his whole life. I don't know, but there should be that bit where, like, he's got it in him that he's a sword for hire, but if he doesn't like your cause, he won't take the money and he'll tell you to bugger off.
Now, I think I would simplify let's simplify this opening bit. Alana is no longer some unrelated character. This is the sister, because that just makes things easier. He's not skeevy.
Yes.
He might be unaware that it's his sister, but at least there's motivation, because now we got Cromwell, who's going to marry her whether she likes it or not. That's part of this movie, too, because we got to have...
And that makes
that old hat.
It makes more sense that he wants to marry her because A, he's taken her away from the beginning, or she, and he's maybe raised her as
and
well.
It solidifies his claim to the throne.
Yeah. Yes, that's why I thought he was trying to marry her the whole time.
And once he, you know, this is how Talon can learn that this actually is his sister and gives him more motivation to stop what's going on.
It's like, somebody from my family's still alive.
Yeah,
right. I didn't know. I'm going to rectify that.
Yeah, and it brings something which I think is like underutilized in movies, which is like not like incestuous, but like the love between a brother and sister. They're like, this is my family. This is someone I love, and I need to protect them and save them. Like that's
and he didn't seem to.
And we'll do it together.
Desire to rule the kingdom that he's the legitimate heir of.
Yeah, no, he just at the end he's like, okay, we're done. Bye.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he doesn't need to be that character. I'm fine with him relinquishing his crown to one of his other relatives.
But acknowledging that he should have the crown, but be like, I don't want to be a king.
I think there was like one character in this movie that kind of recognized him as who he was, and then they never really do anything with that again. It's just, oh, no, here, that's fine. I won't say anything. You know, and that's all these things that you think are going to be plot lines, and then they just go nowhere
and turn into plot holes instead.
Plot holes, plot lines turn into plot holes.
Ooh, and the thing about too, where Cromwell's decided to use his marriage as a way to assassinate all these other kings. Again, good concept.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do anything with it. It's an interesting idea where he decides to just take them out.
Yeah.
Well, and that plan is foiled, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then some of those kings recognize Talon because Talon's crucified as a, I guess, a message to these other kings within the dining room,
the great hall,
whatever the fuck you want to call it.
It was an interesting hall.
Yeah, they had a nice setup with the servers though, in between the tables. That was a good setup.
They've got a nice hall down below, and then where Cromwell was getting married was like the balcony above.
So none of the guests could actually see him getting married. Like,
but he just wanted to be out of the fire zone.
Yeah.
Right? He didn't want to get caught in the crossfire. But I will say this, a crucified barbarian doesn't scream a happy marriage to me.
No.
Right? Or a prosperous marriage or any type of marriage to me.
Especially lords of other kingdoms who have used this particular barbarian for noble causes as well. So his allies are sitting right there.
But I think the other thing about it, too, is I don't know. It's weird. Like, I don't get what Cromwell was trying to do. Was he trying to intimidate them?
No, this was a grasp at a bigger kingdom. He would literally rule all of the civilized world and its kingdoms, or at least within the local boundaries.
Yes, which
they do. They do use the line, the ruler of the civilized world.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know. That's because you only had four other kings there.
Well, he'd already taken out a number of kings because he was a king in his own right at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. He's definitely a warmonger.
Right. Yeah. And then he wanted Talon's father's kingdom or Richard's kingdom.
Good King Richard, I think.
He wanted his kingdom because it was the most prosperous and most peaceful kingdom.
And he also didn't think he could overthrow it with the way it currently was. And that's why he resurrects Zuxia to create plague and other problems within the kingdom, which weakens Zuxia. And once he feels that kingdom was significantly weakened, he went and attacked. He no longer needed Zuxia, and then double crosses Zuxia and stabs him and throws him off a
cliff.
Yeah, and now Zuxia's pissed off too because he's not actually dead, but it takes him a while to make a comeback from falling off a cliff and being stabbed.
Yes. Now that brings up an interesting point about something an opportunity that was missed in this movie right at the very beginning. Right. They spent, I don't know, that opening scene was like, 10 minutes? It was really long.
Too long.
And they give you a shit ton of information in that 10 minutes.
Yeah, and
In a way, it feels long, but at the same time, it's not long enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because there's so much, you're just being bombarded with information.
Right, and they made this half-assed attempt to fill in the holes using the narrator at the beginning. Then he disappears until the very end.
Yes.
And then he does this sort of outro thing, but either use them or don't, but don't half-ass it.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Right? If you're going to have a storyteller, have a storyteller.
Yeah, and maybe have the storyteller be part of his band or whatever. Make the storyteller make sense.
Like in Conan, where the wizard is the storyteller. He does that voiceover and fills in the holes for you.
Yeah.
Right? It worked very well in that movie.
Exactly. Yeah. Make it. Yeah. Make it make sense. Give the make the narrator part of what you're doing, or don't use it.
We could have saved them so much money by just condensing some of these roles. And
oh yeah, like it, they could have. Yeah, they could have made the a few roles into one person. This is one of those times where it's like just too many people, too many people that we don't know why.
But you could have. I mean, I'm going back to what I was saying about this missed opportunity. Aside from the narrator and all that, is the they could have shown more of Cromwell's army invading Richard's kingdom, but they don't show any of that.
Yeah,
it's like it's over and it's done.
Yeah,
and it's all told by through dialogue.
It's a quick flash, really. Yeah.
The best bits we never actually get to see.
Yeah, I mean, when I see swords and sorcery, right? I want to see swords, hear the clanging, see the blood flying, right? Yeah. Because that's what these movies are about. To me, is these epic battles and sword fights.
We don't actually, you know, we have this funky ass sword that with the three blades, and we do see him fire them off at the beginning, but we don't get a lot of sword play in this movie for being called Sword and the Sorcerer. And the sorcerer, outside of ripping out somebody's heart from several feet away,
for 90% of the film,
is gone from 90% of the film,
and there's no other magic,
and there's no other magic other than, you know, having E.T. taco fingers.
Yeah. I don't know if it's because budgetary reasons you can't do big battle scenes. I think that would have been the problem with this movie. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Like, there should be sword fights. There should be sword play. There should be a battle scene. Like I say at the beginning of our rewrite, like a bigger budget because we need some battles.
Yeah, you actually have to see that kingdom being overthrown. You need to have those fights when Talon and his soldiers go in. And I think that should be a little more stealthier because, I mean, they're not coming in with the whole army. Although, you can conscript an army with the other allies that Talon has made throughout himself growing up and, you know, joining this band of merry men.
You certainly could. And, again, through the narrative, he was filling in those blanks when they're talking about Talon's past after he had escaped from Cromwell. That could be done in short 20-30 seconds action scenes.
Yeah, montage it.
Montage it. I mean, that's the perfect place for a freaking montage.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not a big fan of them as a rule, but there are times when they're appropriate. That would be the time to
and
show that passage.
And you could show him aging to a proper age.
Yes.
Like, it will make sense. And then, like, because what I found jarring was when they first introduce him, and like you said, I'm like, that can't be the same guy, because it was so, he was too old. But like, if you montage it and you end it with like the person who you're going to be looking at as Talon for the rest of the film, you're like, okay, now I know who he is. I'm not so confused.
Yeah, exactly.
However, if you cast it properly, it would probably be less confusing.
Yeah, well, I mean, you cast those characters and then give them significant narrative parts rather than just have them introduce them and then disappear for 90% of the movie, because they all do that. If you just start condensing roles, everybody has more to do to forward that narrative.
And it becomes less confusing.
Oh, it's far less confusing. I mean, I had trouble balancing. There was another slave sidekick who wasn't Micah but kind of looked like Micah, and I couldn't balance who I was looking at, especially with those two characters.
Yeah. Oh, the
I didn't really understand Michelli that for most of the movie either, and that turned out to be the sorcerer in disguise. Now that I like is an interesting plot twist. If you would have revealed that a little earlier, that could be interesting.
I think they should have given you clues without revealing it. I think they're because I liked the fact that he didn't actually reveal himself until the end.
This is how I would handle it. He wants revenge. Talon already has his own motivations. Mm-hmm. Maybe he poses as the sister and does the whole magic. Just see that little magic eye thing after the end of their conversation as she's walking away, knowing, okay, that's not who we think it is. And that's the only time you see that. But now we know that the wizard can transform into other people and could be anybody in this movie.
Oh, see, I like that. Yeah, giving him the power to transform more than one form.
Yeah, if you establish it earlier on that he could be anybody in this movie, then everybody is suspect.
That could be, that could be a very interesting way of doing it. But certainly, clues without a full-out reveal. It's like,
and
you do it a couple more times as different characters throughout the movie, and then never know.
Yeah.
But have those characters be, like, actual characters. Because in this one, he was strictly this guy all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, flip out between that guy
characters
or the
characters that actually exist. The sister exists, and say Talon shows up to rescue her, but didn't know he was coming, that sort of thing. Like, there could be some interesting and awkward moments there.
Some things that are just a little bit out of character for the character.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and a little more sorcery. Like, that'll be more sorcery-like.
Yeah.
We'll get that magic we're hoping for.
Yeah, and you could potentially see the sorceress-like things happening without actually seeing who's doing it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you could see, like, that plague of rats in the sewers.
Oh, God, that really
That could have been really
out.
Cool if it had been tied to sorcery somehow, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or a plague of snakes, because the serpent thing was...
Or
was,
the whole rats transform into the sorcerer, like the sorcerer can become the rats.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely opportunities for bigger, better things here. And if you keep wrapping these moments around the sorcerer, oh, yeah, that would be a cool scenes and more things driving the sorcerer's needs as well. I mean, this isn't a good dude. I don't think he cares about ruling. He just wants vengeance on Cromwell.
And he wants what was his. He says that right at the beginning of the movie, but they never explain what that is.
Yeah, we have no idea. We need to figure out what that is.
What did Cromwell promise him?
Yeah. What did Cromwell have to control him in the first place? I mean, he was obviously entombed for a reason. We don't know what that reason was. That should be established.
Yeah, maybe
and
there's an
object.
That
whole tomb of with the faces and the souls is meant to contain this powerful being. So what was all that as well?
And what makes Cromwell think that he can kill this guy with a sword?
That bothered the crap out of me. I'm like, this guy's a sorcerer, and that's what you're going in with?
And he's so powerful that they have to entomb him, and as Jay said, with this tomb of souls.
Maybe Cromwell has a sword. Maybe that's the thing. There is a particular magical charm
that
sword that is the only thing that can kill this guy.
Even more to the whole title of the movie, The Sword and the Sorcerer, right?
So, yeah, I mean, I think they named it after the dude's trisword, which makes no fucking sense whatsoever.
No.
But it should be this...
Ooh.
Maybe that's part of Cromwell as well. Maybe he should actually be overthrowing the kingdom before raising Zusha, a different kingdom, to get that a specific sword. I don't know. That doesn't work that way. I don't think it works that way.
No, I think the opening scene with the raising of Zusha...
Yeah.
But at some point, there has to be some sort of hint that... He has a sword that allows him to...
Ooh, well, maybe there's two mystical swords.
Ooh, yeah. Or maybe...
It's very He-Man in that way.
Yeah, but there's one... You could have it like where he's at the tomb, and there's maybe you don't need witches. They might be part of this kingdom, but you don't need them. And what's keeping Zusha in that tomb is like a sword through his heart, in through this special catacomb that they have. And if he pulls it out, a la the sword in the stone,
whoever holds,
then
the
Zusha's
sword.
Raised. But Zusha can be put back there by that sword at any time.
Yeah, so he has to...
He has to obey the person who has freed him.
Yeah.
That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, pledge fealty to the wielder of the sword. Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, no, that works much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, we just 5 minutes, guys. We got more sword and more sorcerer in this movie.
Justifying the title.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have to. I mean, oh, God. It just, there's a lot going on in this movie, but none of it feels all that important.
No. I think they had a sweeping idea for a story and then just, like, gave up part of the way.
They Jackie Chan'd it.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, so we got this story. Okay, there's this kingdom and he's got to get back. And then, like, the real righteous ruler comes back. And they're like, oh, wait, but we have to add all this other stuff in. We need a few action sequences. And that's it.
Yeah. Oh, we took a break and I went to the trailer and drank some rum. We need that guy. We need a pirate captain.
Yeah. Captain, yeah, he just looks at the bottle. Cast this guy.
Who didn't look like a pirate, but they did say he was a pirate.
I know. See, that's it. Like, you can have a Captain Morgan-ish character, but he's a pirate that Talon has called in because he's like, okay, I found this Cromwell guy. You owe me a favor. Fucking come here.
Yeah, and help us. Don't do it in a whorehouse.
Yeah, no. Well, they just randomly offer their services.
I think you're a bad pirate if you do that. Honestly, I think this is how you do it. At the opening of the movie, when Talon is coming back to this land, that's the ship that him and his soldiers are on.
Sweet.
Yes.
Bang. These guys are automatically allies. You can leave them off the script for a little while before bringing them back in.
Because it's a logical return to the character.
Yeah, it's a logical return.
Yes.
And you still have your core group. In the lands, and you have your allies with Captain Morgan.
I know that. Every time they said it, I giggled. Yeah, I couldn't help it.
Yeah. 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 But we'll be changing that name.
He did look like a fucking badass.
Oh, he was awesome. I think they might have cast him and then really got to like him so much. And they're like, okay, we just got to write more scenes for this guy.
Well, because he looks more heroic than Talon does. Talon looks all big because he's just puffed up with furs and armor a lot.
Which, again, goes back to my whole issue with the costuming.
Yeah.
I
mean,
he's in furs and everybody else is like in warm weather clothes.
Yeah. No. And he, as the leader of an army for hire, he would have been wearing things like armor and bracers and possibly even a helmet.
Yeah.
But he would not have looked like a lord in furs.
No. Like, I don't get it. And it doesn't, like, you're right. It doesn't look that cold out. I just, yeah.
No, they just found anything that looked kind of period and then threw it on people.
And at one point they
asked... Except for the women's clothing.
Yeah.
None of that looked period.
No.
None of that looked period. And some of the costumes...
When they bothered to put them in clothes.
I know, right? They were mixing genres too. Like, well, not genres, but cultures. They had some Arabic stuff in there with the curved swords and the headdresses.
Yeah, the scimitars felt really out of place as well.
Yeah, again, it's like they were borrowing stuff from other sets going, hey, you know what? I got a line on some swords.
Yeah.
They won't even know they're missing. So let's borrow those and then we'll put them back when we're done. Right? That's the way it felt.
That's what these guys did.
Yeah.
That's how it came out under 4 million. That's how they got there. Just borrowing shit. Yeah.
Yes, without permission. I had this feeling it was without permission.
Yeah.
Yeah, well...
The movie came out, they're like, holy shit.
That was pretty common in the 80s, especially with independent productions. They borrowed things. I can think of sci-fi stuff. There's Battle Beyond the Stars. Do you remember that one?
Oh.
We might even cover that someday, but there's
I remember that one.
The specific spaceship I'd seen in more than one cheesy sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah.
That was fairly common to read.
But I felt like when you're talking about the swords, I feel that kind of happened afterwards. They're like going, okay, so like you asked for like a badass sword, but here it is, three swords. They're like, oh my God, that's great. Now where are my other swords? Wait, what? What other swords?
We had to cannibalize three to make that one.
We just made this one. You said I need a really good sword. I said, no, swords. You could just see it being a terrible conversation.
Yeah.
Oh, we thought you meant with swords in one sword. We got it completely wrong. Sorry about that.
But hey, they shoot off. That's cool, right?
Yeah. Holy Spinal Tap.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, we'll keep it. But you got to get me more swords. All right, I guess.
Yeah, and so there's some jarring anachronisms in this movie, and again, largely it probably did come down to budget. It's like what can we salvage from other?
Yeah, I mean, if they made more of a multicultural cast, I don't think that would have been as jarring.
Yeah,
like, you know, especially in Conan, the remake more so, that they established all these other very distinct people within this world. So that wouldn't have felt too out of place with maybe they hired these people to be soldiers and that's what they would have.
Mm-hmm.
But nah, it's just a bunch of white guys that they got out of
white
nowhere.
Guys with heavy eye makeup.
Yeah.
there was a lot of that. Just everything about the production just was painful.
Yeah.
Painful.
Ugh.
Right. And I mean, I'm no film student, but I can tell when something's bad.
Yeah,
it's not. No, it's just not.
Yeah,
it's almost like you feel like these people's first movie and last movie.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
For the production,
I think the only thing that was good, like the costumes were terrible, the lighting was terrible, a lot of the makeup was terrible, the hair was terrible. Yeah. But
I didn't
sets
even mind
weren't
Zusha's
bad.
Look,
the sets, kudos to the set directors actually because they did a good job.
The sets did. They were thinking on how they get stuff done. The set guys were on point.
Yeah. And as much as I like Richard Mull, why wouldn't you do a makeup test before shoot day to find out he gets a bad reaction to makeup and then have to recast the part and the makeup no longer fits the face? So it looks completely different at the end.
Yeah. Like do a few makeup tests, like A, to find out if he's allergic.
Yeah.
And B, if he is, like figure something out. Like there's ways to do this.
Yeah, exactly. So that really bugged me because of it. If it wasn't for the long fingers, they probably would have known that was Zusha.
Yeah, no, I had no idea. I kind of did when I'm like going, oh, okay, so he's transforming. That's got to be the sorcerer. And then he came out, and I was like, what? And it wasn't really even sorcery. like sorcery looking.
That was a very
he just rips himself apart. Yeah,
yeah. I did dig that. That was pretty cool. But
it's cool looking, but it doesn't scream sorcery to me.
No,
no. There should have been lightning and smoke and
yeah. Right?
And flashes of light, like there should have been something to make it actually look better, magical.
Yeah, rather than tearing out, I would may have been better served to have it cracking off or melting off.
Yeah, or yeah, some lightning or something. Some sort of effect that's like more...
And to show the change in its stature, because the actor who was playing Malachi was average height, whereas Richard Mole and Zusha are almost 7 feet.
Yeah. Yes.
Right, so I liked that they're making this sorcerer unnaturally imposing.
Yeah,
right? I liked that, and I did keep that in my casting.
Oh yes, of course.
Yeah, I don't. I tried to cast somebody fairly large as well, but I don't. Don't think he was nearly as tall.
The actor I picked is as tall and has that same imposing voice. Well, not the same voice, but an equally imposing voice.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So where was I going? Off the rails.
Oh, yeah. It was less sorcery, less magic, yeah. An imposing sorcerer.
Yeah, that's where we're going.
Oh, we can move into casting if you want.
I had so much trouble.
I'm regretting my casting, but because as we talk through it, I could think of better actors.
Some of mine are empty.
Yeah, I only went with sort of the core ones because there are so many people in this movie that I only went with sort of the key characters.
Right.
But yeah, I did some of it I'm still happy with.
Well, between the three of us, I think we can come up with something, I think.
I'm sure we can. Because when I was casting my sort of key characters, I was looking for characters who looked, who had the physique of a warrior, and who I knew were good actors. But now I'm thinking about going to that discussion about extending the time so that they're not, it's not just 11 years. They might be a little bit young and maybe too pretty.
Yeah, and I had trouble with that because, like, when they're young, I'm like, I don't get it.
Yeah, I was trying to cast, like, again, like you were thinking, fit, imposing, decent actors, but, you know, with that 300 kind of build.
Yeah.
And I did wind up diving into that movie a couple of times.
Yeah, and I see, because I went younger, and that's the challenge I've brought up numerous times before, is the younger actors out there right now, they're all too pretty.
Yeah, I had a tough time, and mine might be too pretty as well, but Talon was actually the hardest one for me to cast when I was trying to figure this out. I had my Alana right away because she totally looked like Summer Glau, so that's what I did.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I didn't come to Summer Glau, but again, if we're aging up, she'd be perfect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she's a good actress.
Yeah, she's early 30s right now, so if you had that age where maybe she was just a little wee bit older when
she can, and she can play younger too.
She can play younger. I mean, she might be in her 30s, but she could totally play.
Oh, for sure.
Mid-20s. Yeah.
As the original actress could.
Right? Yeah.
Cause she was actually, I think in her 30s when she did this movie, but she looks like she's in her
20s. Yeah. Catherine Beller. Yeah. She looks really young.
Yeah. Well, I read some history on her as well because
yeah, she looks very young in a way that that relationship made me very uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. But I've been doing more.
Especially when she's getting the oil rubbed down naked.
What is that? That whole thing bothered me.
well, things are people fighting around them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting.
I'm like going, okay, so she's getting pampered before she's sold up. I don't care. Like, why are you being so nice?
Well, we were at the start of the 80s and we started to see these obligatory sex scenes or nudity scenes that were just really popular in the 80s.
Well, I mean, if she thought her body would get what she wanted, she would use that. She'd be...
She did establish that as a character, yeah.
Yeah, she'd always, like, you know, I'm totally into you. Like, just on the flip of a dime. And then
made me very uncomfortable.
And then she'd knee him in the crotch, but
cup at the end.
What was with Zusha? She did that to Zusha, and it clunk.
It went clunk like it was like it hit wood.
Yeah, like it hit a block of wood.
Yeah, he doesn't have a penis.
I'm
guessing he's asexual, but why would he?
Like maybe as a sorcerer, he's a different species because he doesn't. He's not human. Else,
but why is there a block of wood sound?
Yeah,
the block of wood sound. I was like, is he wearing a cup? What's happening?
Or was that just something the Foley artist threw in to make sure you realize that it had no effect on him, that she was hitting nothing, right?
Yeah.
But a chunk of wood. Yeah, go figure.
That was just, oh my God.
Yeah, and certainly I don't think Alana...
Funny in a way that it should have been.
Yeah, we'll take, take out her overt willingness to sell herself.
Yes. Yeah. Gotta get rid of that.
Yeah, that's gone. Yeah.
Much, but we're also getting rid of the fact that people are always going like, well, if you pay me with what you got there. Yeah, we got to get rid of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that really diminishes talent right away.
It does. Yeah. It makes him look like a sleazy opportunistic misogynist.
Yeah, and I'm fine with him being a rogue and being like, yeah, I'm in it for the money. It's just that bit a little too much.
Yeah. And he could be a player, but you know, yeah, if we merge her character with the sister that's taken that doesn't really have much of a part,
yeah,
then you got something and you've already simplified your cast. We talked
and
about that.
You could have like a whole Luke and Leia thing where he finally realized, holy crap, it's my sister.
Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly, yeah.
Which is, if you want to insert some comedy, I think that's funny.
Yeah, I mean, you could show his attraction to her.
Yeah.
Like the fact that he does find her attractive without being sleazy about it.
True.
Right? And I think that would make a fun plot point.
Yeah,
right?
True. And then the realization
is like, ew. Ew.
They're both going, ew. Oh, no.
That would be a lot more fun. And I mean, there's some humor in this film.
Yeah.
But
It falls so flat.
I shouldn't call it humor. I should call it attempts at humor.
Attempts at humor, and then there are things that are humorous that certainly weren't intended. So.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and I really wish that I'd cast his sidekick. What was his name? There's the one that's...
Oh,
Darius?
Darius. That was Joe Regalbuto.
Yeah, Regalbuto. Yeah. From Murphy Brown fame.
That's right.
Because he was fun, and I thought about casting and went, nah, you know what, he's not really in it enough, but
yeah, I think
that,
cause
but you can make him a new character.
I mean, because he was the comic relief.
I would merge that person with Captain Morgan.
Oh yeah, Darius and Captain Morgan. Yeah. Like, I want Darius to be...
He could be Captain Darius.
Darius.
Captain
Darius.
Yes.
That's Morgan a good, Darius.
Strong captain name.
Yeah, Captain Darius.
Yeah.
I could get behind that. I could say maybe that. Yeah, Darius.
Yeah.
And then he's on equal footing with Talon.
Yeah. Because
when you're talking about like a charming... The lead was a roguish guy. Captain Morgan seemed to be that more charming rogue.
Yeah.
Like, he was more, I felt him more charismatic than the lead.
Mm-hmm.
Well, absolutely. I mean, he was probably the weakest link in the whole film, and
he was amazing.
Yeah, he stole his scenes.
Yes.
That was
Captain Morgan's
Earl
amazing.
Earl Maynard, by the way. If anyone looks him up.
Earl Maynard, you're awesome.
Yeah, I don't know if he's ever done anything past this. I've never seen this guy.
I don't care. Thank you, Earl Maynard, for your service.
He's probably a bodybuilder who had the day off.
Yeah, it may have been.
He struck me more as a dancer, because he was very lithe and very
I don't know.
Physical.
He's big dude.
He was big, but he was lean.
Yeah. Well, since I started the casting, I guess I'll just keep going. As I said, I cast Summer Glau as Alana, who is now the sister that hires him in our remake. As Talon, I went with Taylor Kitsch, because I think he's on the cusp of something, and he just keeps taking shitty roles. And
I
maybe
know.
This movie is still a shitty movie, but I don't...
He's kind of been here, done that.
He'll do something with it.
With John Carter of Mars.
And if we keep him a roguish hero, I think he can do that.
He's a good actor.
Yes.
He's just had really bad luck.
Yeah, and I like John Carter. I really do. It was just that one, its biggest disaster was marketing.
Mm-hmm. As usual, yeah. Same with other movies that came out around the same time.
So I'm going to give him another shot. Zusha, I went with Peter Mensah. I wanted somebody who was fairly tall but had that deep voice that Zusha had that Richard Mull could put on. His voice always resonated ever since Resident Evil.
Yeah.
There was just like, oh man, he would make a kick-ass bad guy, and he's like big and in shape, like he's actually a pretty lean dude, so he looks like somebody could put up a fight as well.
Oh yeah, and he's
so
not
that climactic scene would be a lot more interesting,
and he's like a big guy, but he's not like a tank that looks like he can't move his own neck.
He's not hugely muscular by any means, but he's fit
but lean. So I think that would work. My Cromwell is Luke Evans.
Ooh,
somebody who could fight, looks mean. I think it would fit that role pretty good between seeing him as a villain in Fast and the Furious and Dracula Untold, which was a disaster. But
oh yeah,
I think he could fit in that period role rather nicely. another actor, I think, who just needs a better movie.
Like a lot of actors, is it?
Oh, yeah.
Now, my Michelli, who is essentially Zusha, and he's working all the different sides, all the angles. In fact, I wrote down, like, I don't know what side he's on. And that turns out to be Zusha, who's just manipulating from the inside.
Who's on his own side, yeah.
Yeah, he's on his own side.
Yeah, I feel he wants to bring everything down because he's pissed.
And I still like to have that character there.
Oh, for sure.
So now you have Zusha, two different Zushas, and that would be Tom Hiddleston.
Nice.
Oh, I like that. I think I still like my choice better, but I like that.
Yeah. Okay. My Verduga, he's the guy who is the jailer, who actually had a decent scene. He was grinding the knives and taunting all the soldiers in jail. I kind of wanted to have him in there. I don't know why, but I went with Nathan Jones. He was in Troy, and he was Rictus in Max Fury Road. So
okay.
Just wanted him in there.
Yeah, he had the best death scene in the whole movie.
Exactly. Yeah. He got his face grinded off. So,
which is awesome.
Yeah, so I kind of wanted that still in there. Micah, who becomes the new king and is the one everybody's trying to rescue, I did Sullivan Stapleton, who kind of looked the part. So
cool. Yeah, Simon McCorkindale. That took me forever to recognize him in this movie.
Yeah.
Because I've seen him in so much, and I'm but he was so dark, and the makeup was so dark, and the lighting was so dark.
And he had blood on him most of the time.
Yeah, it took me a long time, and I'm like, oh, wait, that's who he is.
Yeah. So for director, I went with I was kind of torn, and then I finally settled on Ridley Scott.
He knows how to do the sword movies.
Yeah,
he does.
If he's going to make a good action sword and sorcery kind of movie, that would be totally him. I mean, he's definitely done great period pieces with gladiators.
And he can do wonderful battles as well as just one-on-one sword fights.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can see that.
Okay. So let's go on to yours, Sam, and see if we can't flesh this out a little bit better. Because I'm not completely sold on some of these guys.
No, and as I said, I'm a little reluctant to even say the names of the two people I picked for Talon and Micah, but I'm going to do it because I did it. I'm going to start with Cromwell because he's my favorite of all the casting I've done.
Yeah.
I cast Tommy Flanagan from Sons of Anarchy.
Oh.
With the scars on his cheek because I wanted that same unique look.
Oh, I like him.
He's got, and he's older, so he's got that presence, and so with the gray in his hair, I could see him as this evil king.
Needs to be a little older, you're right.
That's good cast. Okay. I'll relent on that one.
Yeah, for Talon, again, because I was going for somebody in their mid to late 20s because of the 11-year passage of time rather than the 20-year passage of time, I went Taylor Lautner. I think he's got the physicality. He's got the acting chops. He actually is a very competent actor.
I did think about him, actually.
But he's pretty. He might be a little too pretty.
Well, my actor was just as pretty, so.
That's fair enough. So I think he could pull it off. I think he could pull off the physicality and the...
We'll just get somebody to punch him a couple of times. He'll look a little rougher.
Yeah. Or, I mean, give him the 5 o'clock shadow, but less pretty, right?
Yeah.
Make it look a little rougher, and just to rough him up a little bit, but still keep him handsome.
Oh, yeah.
And he can pull off that roguish grin really well.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's already got that down pat.
Yeah, I'm not sold on that one, but I wasn't sold on Kitsch either.
So. Yeah, so I could go either way on those guys.
Yeah.
For Prince Micah, I went with Kellan Lutz.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yes, nice. Yeah.
I mean, he's blonde, but so what? He's still, again, physical, handsome, kind of, and I think he's got that prince, he could pull off that princey look, right? I mean, for lack of a better way of putting it. Mm-hmm. That regal look, I guess. I think he could pull that off quite easily.
I always think of him as more He-Man. He's a tall, big guy.
Yeah. Well, he's a fairly lean, muscular guy. Like, he's not broad, but he's very fit.
Yeah, well, and Prince Micah, he seems to just keep getting caught a lot and not putting up much of a fight, and I feel like he should be. If he's
going to
be future king, this guy should show kingly qualities, and he wasn't during the film.
No, you're right.
See, but I don't know. Here's the thing. Kingly qualities are great, but I don't think the king is going to be the best fighter in your kingdom.
No, certainly you're right, but he should have some skill as a fighter.
Oh, yeah, some, but something if he gets caught, it's going to happen.
You know who he reminded me of in the original movie? He reminds me of Daenerys Targaryen's brother in Game of Thrones. I want my throne, I want my throne, I want my throne.
Yeah.
Right? But really, he doesn't deserve it. That's the way I felt about Micah in this movie, is he didn't really, he didn't seem like he would be a good king. He felt like he was entitled to it, but he didn't really deserve it, right? And that's kind of the way I feel about him in that. And I think that whoever we cast.
Yeah, and I got no instinct from Micah that he was going to be, like, you're right, a good king or a just king. Like, I didn't know where his morality really lay.
Yeah, no, he was just this heir, this mysterious heir to the throne.
Yeah.
And he just wanted what was his. He didn't really come across as though he'd even be a better king than Cromwell.
Yeah, it's true.
Right? I mean, I'm sure he would have been.
Well, when he's getting tossed to that crowd, he almost gets that snotty little grin going.
Yeah, yeah.
I almost felt like he was going to be another fucking bastard.
That fucking bugged me the most. He's like going, okay, so I'm here. Ew, yay, my crown. Like, that bugged the crap out of me.
Yeah, I didn't like that either.
I'm like, okay, so the crown's down there. You just take it, you little dick. There's no humbleness there.
None whatsoever. You didn't even do anything to earn it. Again.
Yeah.
Everybody else did all the work for him.
Yeah. Yep. I would have changed that scene slightly. I don't know. I'd erase it from the remake. But if it had stayed, I would have had him pick up the crown, look at it, realize who Talon is. He's like, this is actually yours.
Yeah.
At least that would give him some redeeming qualities after all of the work everybody's gone to free him. And then you can have Talon going, no, this is your kingdom now.
Yeah.
And at least he doesn't come off like
or Talon being a pussy. Like.
Yeah,
a pushover,
and also Talon coming back, being like, "Yeah, no, this is your kingdom now. This is great, but if you fuck it up, I'm coming back."
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. It's some accountability, and like
I'm loyal to you to a point, but this is my place. You'd be good to it.
Yeah, take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for Michelli, I went with Cillian Murphy.
Nice.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, I think that he could bring that kind of creepiness to the role.
That's really good.
For Princess Elena, I went with Emily Rossum.
Okay.
She's good.
Yeah, again, that sort of same kind of look. For my Zusha, I'm with Brad Garrett because that voice. And he is 7 feet tall. He's massive.
Yeah, he's a giant man.
Right. He's not as lean as Jay's casting, but...
I don't know. I just keep thinking of The Tick and...
Oh no! That he's not in The Tick. That's Patrick Warburton.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was getting him mixed up.
Yeah. He's the brother in Everybody Loves Raymond.
The one with the really deep voice.
My least favorite
voice.
Show that ever got made.
No, but I loved him. He's the only part.
He was the only good character. Yeah, yeah. Everybody else in that family, I would have killed in a murder-suicide.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
I agree with you.
I think he's got a very similar thing to him that Richard Mall had. Because Richard Mall was just tall. But at the same time, he's, you know, you watch Night Court. He's super lovable.
Yeah,
yeah, he was bull. Really, he was just a sweetie.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I was going for. I was going for that Richard Mall type of... Actor,
oh yeah,
right.
He's totally like that,
and that's. I'm like, he's
but
perfect.
Still has that big deep.
Yeah, I had such a struggle. Voice. I didn't actually end up casting that.
And then for my director, because I really like him, and because he writes great action scenes, and because he's never done a fantasy film, I thought this would be a great opportunity for him to fix this mess. I went with Christopher McQuarrie.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because he's written. I mean, everybody hates this movie, but I love it. I loved Way of the Gun.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was.
Oh, it's not a bad
movie.
It's a good movie.
And then, of course, lately he's got the most recent Mission Impossible, and there's another one that I all of a sudden have left my mind. But he's done Usual Suspects. He wrote, so we know that he can fix this movie.
The narrative holes.
Yes, the narrative holes. Mm-hmm. I think that he could do that very well, and I think he's very great at storytelling. He can he can tell the whole story. Without losing you.
And he can also hold off on the reveal.
Yes.
If you've done The Usual Suspects, that's the ultimate in holding off on your reveal.
Yeah, so, and he could do it very well.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Yeah, so I think that he would be
I really like that, yeah.
Nice.
Sorry, Ridley, you got bumped.
You bumped.
Yeah, well, he keeps doing sequels to Aliens and Blade Runner, and he's falling back on old things now.
Yes, he is.
So maybe it's not Ridley's time anymore.
True. I don't know. My casting is fine. I struggled with this whole thing because because you're trying to find people who can do like sword and sorcery things, but you're also trying to think a little bit outside of your normal casting. I had trouble with Zsuzsa. I didn't have one for Zsuzsa because I was trying to think of the same qualities you wanted. Somebody tall and imposing, but with that voice. And I'm like going, yeah, they kind of usually have like the deep voice, but I want like more gravitas. So I couldn't quite get there. So like the Michelli I found easier to do because Michelli's the face most of the time of Zsuzsa. Yeah. So I for Michelli I got Tim Roth because he's my favorite.
Oh, I like Tim Roth.
Yeah. I love him being evil. For Cromwell, I went a little bit, he might be a little young for this, but I like him being in it, Mads Mikkelsen. and he has done previous period pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see him being truly evil. You'd move Tim Roth and Mads Mikkelsen? Tim Roth. Because
think about it.
He could be small. Yeah, Cromwell could be like a smaller guy, but Tim Roth could be like just this. He's a warrior, but he's still like he doesn't have to be tall and imposing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, screw this.
I mean, I like that casting. I'm
writing arrows on it now.
I think that flipping actually those. Might work better in reverse.
Yeah.
For Talon, I went a little bit out in a different area. I don't know if you're familiar with Lee Pace.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I love him. I think he's tall and I think he can do roguish. He can do charming and sweet. I'm like, but and he could also do some dark stuff. Have you ever seen The Fall? It's great. Like he's brilliant in that.
I quite like that.
He's good. And I think he's like the right age. He's not too young, but not too old.
Yeah.
For Micah, I put Matt Bomer in there because Micah doesn't have to be as young. As he needs to be a little bit older to like be supposedly somebody who is related to Alana. But I was thinking maybe he might be just like Alana ended up escaping and ended up being raised with him, with his family, which is why he thinks of her as a sister, even though it's not his real, like it's an adoptive sister.
Right.
So there's a whole thing there. But I love him. He's like, and he's very kind of handsome and I think he's kingly. I think he could do like that elegance, but also be not as good at being the fighter. But be good enough to be just what you want. Like, not awful, but not the best.
Capable.
Yeah, capable.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, I went with my usual one. I usually did. Natalie Dormer. I love her. I like her as an Alana, and it was a lazy casting choice. I'll admit it. It was a lazy casting choice.
That's me and Olivia Wilde, so. When I don't know Olivia Wilde.
And as we were discussing it, I did a. You're talking about Darius and Captain Morgan being the same person, Captain Darius. I want to put in Damon Wayans Jr. He is charming. He is funny. And I think he could do some action stuff.
Physically fit.
He's physically fit. I think he can pull off the charm required of the role, and he's like he could be that comic relief that whole movie through.
Yeah, I could see it.
So neither of us did it.
That's bold casting.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And something a little out of his wheelhouse.
True, yeah. I'd like to see him play like kind of a pirate guy. I'd love to see
and
that.
And why not? His uncle did it in the Dungeons and Dragons movies? Marlon was in those.
Yeah.
I mean, they were horrible. Good examples of how not to do it. True. But make it a family thing. Go in and do some fantasy movies.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe have Marlon as one of the pirates.
Yeah, that could be a lot of fun.
That could be, yeah.
Yeah, or his older uncle advisor.
Oh, that would be awesome.
And they could play off each other so well. It'd be so much fun.
Oh, yeah. He's good.
I think we're writing a whole new movie here.
We are.
Just around these two.
We're kind of getting rid of it and then just having them on a ship.
We got a short film on the disc. It just tells their story.
This is our sequel. This is our Rosencrantz and Guildenstern of Sword and the Sorcerer.
I like that.
I like that very much.
There you go.
Just jump into their scenes and then go back to do whatever they were doing.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I like it.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Very cool.
And well, your directors are so great. Not even going to say what I thought.
Okay, fair enough. No, you have to. You have to. I'm not going to let you off the hook that easy.
Hey, I said the name Taylor Lautner out loud. You can tell us who your director is.
Taylor Lautner.
I said Taylor Kitsch with a straight face.
No, but see, Taylor Kitsch, is it like a reasonable?
He is, yeah.
I was trying something different with it when I was going through my little casting, and I'm like, wait, I know somebody who can do action and probably goes a little bit weird and might be able to write better women. I had Catherine Bigelow.
That's bold. She tends to focus more on
But she's never done fantasy.
No,
so
she focuses
like,
tend mostly on like current events and the war and stuff like that.
But she's good at modern war. Why don't we put that in medieval setting?
We have three really good director choices. I don't know.
That there is nothing wrong with that.
I can't believe you
weren't going to say that.
Really?
Well,
yeah.
I wasn't sure because I'm like, she's just, I don't know. Yeah, because I've never seen her do like magic and mystery and... Yeah, maybe this is a new challenge for her.
Well, there's no reason to fall back on old hat either. Like, yeah. Just because they haven't done one.
Oh no, she can do action. It's just that was the other part I was kind of uncertain about.
Well, and I mean, a good director will hire people who know how to do this type of thing, right?
Yeah,
a director knows how to.
Okay, I'm standing in my own way.
Like even Albert Pion, when he cast Anthony DeLongis in here, usually when Anthony DeLongis is in a movie, he's also the fight choreographer. Nice. Which, I don't know, he might have had the day off from that job, but...
Yeah. Well, no, I think they might have shot footage and then just not used it.
Yeah.
Because the lighting guy also wasn't there.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that, yeah, all three director choices are excellent. We're going to have to call them up and ask them which one wants to do it.
Yeah, exactly, because right? We've got a good movie here.
Yeah, we totally do.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, we've made improvements on the movie for sure.
Yeah, yeah,
and
for sure.
I mean, who doesn't like, I think, I have a love of like fantasy movies where there's like magic and stuff happens and like there's evil sorcerers and like good sorcerers. And I think there's like a dearth of it. And I would like to see it done well and somebody take like a real good run at it.
Yeah.
We've not had a good fantasy movie, not counting Lord of the Rings or Hobbit. And there's a difference of opinion on those as well.
Yeah. Well, outside, yeah, really, when you look at what's been done recently, because Sword and Sorcery stuff and fantasy films really went away. And you would have thought after Lord of the Rings, Hobbit, Harry Potter franchise, and the attempt at Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, that we would have more fantasy.
Yeah.
But there really hasn't. It's pretty much just been that.
Yep.
Yeah, and then the most recent Conan movie, which unfortunately didn't do well enough
to revive the genre.
Well, we're going to talk a lot more about that genre next week on our retrospective episode on fantasy films, because we're going to hold off on the icing on the cake for another week. After our retrospective is Clash of the Titans. So... the best and probably the biggest of the remakes.
Oh my god.
One of my favorite 80s films that, boy, I can barely get through that. Well, this will be an attempt because I don't think I've ever gotten through that remake. So
I've only ever gotten through the remake in two parts. So I can't do the whole thing at once.
So yeah, that'll be in 2 weeks, guys.
Okay, we'll gear up for that.
Yeah, but you can always tell us what your favorite fantasy films are on our social media, at Invasion Remake, Invasion of the Remake over on Facebook, and, of course, invasionoftheremake@gmail.com if you want to get long and wordy about it.
Yeah.
And, of course, we'll read your comments on the air. If you got suggestions of things you want us to do, we'll definitely take a look at those. Oh, for sure.
And I think there's some wonderful gems in this genre that could be remade.
Oh, for sure.
And that's the thing. We were looking at the remake stuff, and like, there's plenty we'd like to remake. But outside of Conan and Clash, we had a real tough time finding stuff that had been remade.
Too true.
No, it's because it's, unfortunately right now, it is a dead genre that really shouldn't be.
Well, and genres are cyclic, and that should have made a comeback, but didn't. It just didn't.
Maybe we'll get it. We'll start gearing them up. They'll hear our podcast, and they'll be like, hey, this is a great idea.
Yeah. Well.
Here's hoping.
Yeah, they've shown us that they can make good ones, but... I guess when you do Tolkien, everything else just looks kind of lame after that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but let's save that for next week's
retrospective,
I think, because that's a lot to be said there.
There's a lot to be said there, for sure.
We're starting a whole new conversation right now.
Yep.
Yeah. And that conversation will continue next week on Invasion of the Remake. I feel like I need a voiceover guy for that.
Invasion of the Remake. I can't do it.
Invasion of the Remake.
Hey, anybody, any listeners or voiceover guys, send us your best intro.
Nice.
Yeah, we're also still looking for music, so if you're a musician out there, we're still taking submissions. Email that to us as segment music, lead music, closing music, whatever. We're totally want to hear what crazy shit you've got cooked up. So lots of room on this show for creative stuff, and we want to hear it from our fans as well. One of our fans gave us a movie to watch, and we've decided that we are going to do something with that, so look forward to that at another episode. And that just goes to show you guys have a voice, and we are going to listen, and we're going to turn that into a whole new thing. So
you betcha.
We're going to call that the Fan Challenge.
Yep.
It's coming.
And it looks like fun.
It does look like fun.
Really does. I feel that there's a lot to do with that one.
It may not be good, but it will be fun.
Oh, it will be fun. And it's going to be like on the spot. We're going to watch that movie and then go right into it and try to remake it, rethink it, on the spot. We're not going to have like a few days like we usually do.
Yes.
So it'll be very kinetic, and we'll try to figure out something a little different to work with around those as well. I think there'll be the shorter segments. We might do them as bonus materials in a week, and they're not going to be all the time. Well, unless you guys got given to us all the time. Yeah. But we'll definitely take a look at things, and you know, not everything will get done. We'll see how it fits within the model of the show, because you know,
we usually go through like theme months.
Yeah,
so.
don't give me, you know, Spider-Man 3. We all know that sucks. Don't.
And what can we do with it, really?
Just you know, that's too obvious, right? You know, something that you wanted to like and turned into a terrible movie. I want to find a terrible movie that started as a terrible movie that we can make into a good movie.
That could have been a good movie.
Yeah,
that you feel that there's something in there like, oh my God, such potential.
Yeah. And as we've proven, some of the kookier ones are the more fun to do. So.
Hell yeah.
So I'll have to say that The Monolith Monsters was one of my favorite episodes to do.
So good.
That was one. I've been dreaming of doing that one since the inception of the show. I've been talking about it, and every time I brought it up, everybody's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
And what's it saying is it led into another one we did.
Yeah.
That's the insanity of the whole thing.
Now that we've been going for a while, you know, we're getting close to a year now, and we've got continuity between some of these movies.
We do.
When I picked this one, I didn't notice it was another Albert Pion movie. I'm like, God, we're going to connect back to Cyborg again. And his obsession with crucifixion.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's an interesting character.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we might actually just have to look at his body of work and see if we can research the dude, because there's something going on there.
He's got a thing.
Yeah, I don't know. We all make fun of Uwe Boll, but...
He wasn't the first one.
He wasn't the only one.
No.
Anyway, so you know what? That was Sword and the Sorcerer, and that was kind of fun. I mean, that was a terrible movie, and my inner child who liked this movie is now going, what the fuck? But I think we could safely say that our remake is actually watchable. So
yes, I believe so.
All right. Well, I'm Jason.
I'm Sam.
I'm Trish.
And guess what? We're out of here.
Bye-bye.